Welcome to the message podcast of Catalyst Baptist Church, a vibrant church with two campuses located west of Melbourne, Australia. Dedicated to creating a welcoming and safe space for everyone to explore and grow their faith in God, our vision is to see hope multiplied within our community and around the world. We hope this podcast serves as a source of encouragement and spiritual growth for you. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to journeying with you in faith.
Can I just ask you to hold those thoughts for a moment? I want you to stay right there, right there. I just don't want you to rush through it. I don't want you to miss something that is significant. Because what these young people had just gave us was not a performance. It was a testimony. A testimony of a son and daughter standing before their mothers and saying, we know it, we see it, we know the cost it takes and we're grateful. I don't know about you, but that touched me deeply right there. And maybe for you, maybe it's the line that RG sang and start with, "Some days were hard, I saw you fall, and suddenly you were 10 years older again, and you come to realize that your mom held everything together in a season that you could never imagine." Or maybe it's the line that Joanna's sung, "You hit your tears, I'd feel strong, and something in your chest, you said, that's my mother. She was strong, she was brave enough on the outside than she had any right to be." Maybe it was the line of the chorus on the bridge, "Point me to Jesus Christ too." And then it brought someone, a face in your mind that almost like caught you by surprise. Or maybe, if I can just hold this very tenderly, maybe the song just bring up grief. Maybe someone is not in the room this morning. It's either is a phone call away that you never get to meet, make, the other side of the ocean, or maybe they're on the other side of heaven. I just want you to hold whatever it is, the song touching you, that's exactly where this message, this sermon is going to live. Not at a safe distance, not from behind the pulpit, but right there in that unguarded place that song just opened up. Perhaps this song unlocks something that you've been carried deeply, quietly in your heart for such a long time. So before I begin this morning, can I ask you to do one thing? And if you were here yesterday, I know Karen will say amen. You know what I'm just about to say. Take a breath. Breathe. Breathe. Stop. Breathe. And as you breathe, bring one face to mind. Just one. The woman whose love, imperfect, human, costly, and real, has shaped who you are today. I want you to hold her face, hold her smile, hold her voice, and hold whatever it is that kind of on the surface for you right now. Just hold it for just a short moment. Good. That is our text this morning. Three words. She was and is the sermon. Not perfect, not polished, not trained at the theological college or ordained, but she was the most powerful living word of God many of us have ever encountered. And today here at Catalyst on this Mother's Day, I want to preach about her. I want to honor that sermon, and I want to make space for every person in this room, whatever your story with your mother looks like, to bring it all of it to this moment. First movement in that song is that I saw you fall. The sermon of getting back up, of you, is one word, resilient. Archie opened the song with something brave, something most of us would have softened it or almost ignore. I know you didn't have it all. Some days were hard, but I saw you fall. But every time you got back up and gave me more than enough. We don't live in a world that makes it easier to be a mother. According to the National Working Family Survey 2024, stress levels for Australian mothers trying to balance career and caregiving have reached the highest point in 5 years. The pressure to work as if you don't have children and raise children as if you don't have a job is so real. The expectation is to be everything all the time, and the gap between that expectation and what is humanly possible is where falling happens. But here's what I want to say to every mother in this room today. whatever that roles look like for you. The fall is not the final word. The fall is not the final word. Proverbs 24:16, it highlights the reality of those who's faithful. For though the righteous fall 7 times, they keep rising again. Think of Hagar in the wilderness. You know the story, sitting at a distance because she could not watch her son dying. And the angel of the Lord met her in the falling and said to her, "Do not be afraid, for God has heard the boy crying." God meets mother in her falling. What about Hannah? Weeping so hard in the temple that the priest thought that she was drunk and intoxicated. Falling into grief, and God heard her groaning, and she got back up. Think of the mothers in this very room here. Many of you who came from the Pacific, from Asia, from Africa, you left everyone and everything you knew to build a life here in this nation for your children. You work early shift and work afternoon and night shift. You send money back home, you spend it on yourself. That you'd rather spend yourself. You fell in the bed tired and you get up in the morning and keep going to work before the alarm simply because you want to do it for your children. C.S. Spurgeon is the greatest preacher of the 19th century. Once said this, that never could it be possible for a man to estimate what he owes to a godly mother. Spurgeon's mother was not a perfect woman. She was a woman who got back up, a woman who prayed through the corridor. She stood outside her children's bedroom night and prayed in the seat for them by name. She was that committed. For 36 years, I've been blessed to be living with a woman like that. My wife, it's Anne. I confessed to her this week as we were sitting down to talk about Mother's Day gift, because here's an opportunity. I'm the one's going to buy her Mother's Day gift. And I confess to her and I say, before I tell you and ask you what you're going to have, I just want to confess to you that, you know what, I did not marry you because you were good looking and attractive. I saw something deep and better than that. Is she a good wife and a mother? She kind of half smiled. But I know completely she wasn't sure about, was I not good looking? You did not like me. I was handsome. I was really pretty for a girl. I said, that's not my point. You're still beautiful. But there was something deep and profound. I said this very humbly. This woman, and I say this, the bottom of heart, the greatest, one of the greatest and hardworking person I've ever known. The most loving and most caring. She has taught me more in love, faithfulness, and resilience. From the garden and the rubbish bin, from the kitchen to the taking care of the bedroom, and then, you know, from serving resident in the aged care to standing out there and welcome people and smiling there. She taught me more than I could ever teach from this stage, I must confess. You know, I preached many Sundays and gone home thinking I have something good that I gave out. Then I walk through the door and suddenly I see someone start preaching that sermon with the broom like their little drawing and start working, start preaching that sermon quietly, without any recognition. Wow. To every mother here who is tired, frustrated, who feels like you've been falling more than rising lately, chapter one of your sermon, the chapter called She Got Back Up, maybe the most powerful chapter of all. And then with the song, it moved to the second movement. You hit your tears. And that next chapter of your story, it's about a story that was written in the dark. Joanna's verse carries a different kind of weight here in that song. There were nights you stay up late, carried more than your own weight. You hit your tears so that I can feel strong. and somehow help me carry on. The National Church Life Survey 2021, when asked who in their family was the best example who followed Jesus, 87% of the 5,000 children said, "My dad, no. My mother. After all the drama of Jesus' early childhood, from the angel to the Magi and to Egypt and the temple, Luke writes just this quiet sentence that we find in the gospel. He says that his mother treasured all these things in her heart, deeply down there. She carried things in a place that no one else could see. Because mothers write chapters, they write them in the dark, in a lonely place, and it's quiet that we can't, even children, read. That only can make sense when we are grown up, when we understand a little of what it costs to love someone more than yourself. Many of you grew up in Pacific Island homes, and I speak into that because I know it quite well. Whether you're Tongan, Samoan, Rarotongan, Fijian, or Maori, where the mother was the mothers were the backbone of the household, the keeper on faith, the one who held the family together across the hemisphere. She prayed in her language. She cooked for the whole street. She never missed a Sunday. She never missed a school pickup. She never let the children see when the money's run out. She just managed it. It's call it faithfulness, and never gave it a grander name than just that. And it's not only for biological mothers. Let me talk about the aunties in our home, in our family, and I suspect that in many of yours as well, there are women who are doing deep, daily, irreplaceable mothering work without the title, even men. We have two daughters in the house, including the one who just wrote that song, and so if it's too emotional, just blame her. Who are not yet mothers themselves, but every week they show up for their niece and nephews, 5, 4, and 2, at home. They got down on the floor, they change nappies, they feed them. They take them, they bathe them, they show up, and then yet they show up on a Sunday morning when they could be sleeping in. They're tired too, but they are there. And those children will grow up and think back one day and say, "Yes, that's my auntie. You hit your tired, you made it feel easy, and somehow you helped me carrying it on." D.L. Moody once said this, that the impression that a praying mother leaves upon her children is lifelong. Perhaps when you are dead and gone, your prayer will be answered. Written in invisible ink, in a dark, in a lonely place, in places no one could see, until one day we grow and we can finally read it clearly. Which takes us to the third movement of this song. And she pointed me to Jesus. Chapter 3 of the sermon is perhaps one of the most important lines of that song. The preach is the hints of the whole song. You show me grace in all you do. Point me to Jesus Christ too. Not perfect, not but always real. And that's the kind of love that I feel. Again, the NCLS 2016 found that 59 of all Australian church attenders say their mother was the most important person to show them what faith is about. And among young Australians aged 15 to 29, the generation most likely to walk away from faith, 58% still name their mother as the primary person who showed them what it means to follow Jesus. So to point your child to Jesus in a culture that looking elsewhere is a radical act of courage and faith. And to all of you who keep doing it, keep doing it. There is something beautiful. The Bible shows us how that often happens. Paul writes to Timothy, and we read in that, I've been reminded of your sincere faith. And he talked about him, which first lived in your grandmother, Lois, and in your mother, Eunice. Timothy's faith didn't just happen at the theological college or a conference. It was lived into him by a grandmother who prayed and prayed and prayed, and a mother who modeled faith in ordinary kitchen and ordinary mornings. She pointed, he flew, and God exceeded what she dared to ask. I look at my own son, a grown man now married, building a life at home with his wife. When I trace back through who he is, how he loves, the faith he carries, the man he's becoming, I can easily trace those lines back through his dad, no, his mom. Because that was mommy's boy, mommy's boy. Through the grace that she modeled when she raised, she didn't feel it. Through the prayers he prayed in the hallway outside his door, and when she thought he was asleep. And I remember her praying so hard, and I could do sometimes sick of her saying it loudly and prayerfully, "Lord, give my son a good Christian." When he left to go to America for the basketball scholarship, he said, "Pray for my son that you'll have a good Christian wife." But she's Tongan. And the Lord said, "I'm not sure about your request. But because you've been so faithful, I'm going to grant that to you, but I'll give you something that is better than what you thought initially. I'll give you a beautiful, loving, humble, caring, wise daughter-in-law who loves the Lord. And she will love you." Okay, that's good. But she's white American girl. You should see her face, oh Lord, but. And if that's not good enough, their first child is going to be a girl, and she will be named Little Anepua. And it did. She pointed him, my son, to Jesus. And our son, together with his wife, and their children, is still walking in that direction today. So it's not perfect, but she's always real. And that is the kind of love that changes a generation. And you and I here because of that. To every Pacific Island mother in this room, hear this. You came from a culture where faith is in the water. Where the church is not something you attend, it's something that you are. You brought that faith across the ocean, you planted it in the suburbs of Melbourne. You built in kitchen that smell like taro and coconut cream and love in children who grew up between two worlds and found Jesus holding both together. That is a sermon. And it is still being preached today. Which leads us to the fourth movement. Now I'm older, and while I have the chance, the chapter that we almost didn't write, and Lupe beautifully sung that verse of maturity. Now I'm older, I can see, and the way you shielded me, in every sacrifice you made, there's a love that never fades away. You have had that moment? When you become old enough to see what you couldn't see as a child. When I was young, I thought some of my mother's decisions and way of teaching me and disciplining decisions were unreasonably too strict. The yearly bedtime, that you can't go there kind of conversation, you must do this and not do that. The prayer, prayers, everything, whether it's before meals, before bed, and before going to the bush and the plantation, to go to the sea, wherever. That definitely didn't need 5 minutes of intercession before you get out the door. I thought it was excessive until I grew older and I become a parent. And I became every single one of those things. And Jasmine then sang the most urgent words, "While I have the chance to say, though all the years and all the stuff, just know your love has shaped my life." While I have the chance, these four words get heavier with every passing years. We carry gratitude around like a letter we keep meaning to send. We hold appreciation like a gift that we keep meaning to wrap up. And then one day, the chance is different or smaller or gone, and we missed it. I want to speak with care, speak with love to those whom today carries a different weight. Some of you are here and your mother is not in the room. She passed away recently last year, or a decade ago, or so long ago that some people have stopped asking you, how are this day like for you today? But you know, you walk in this morning and some phrase, the songs, the flowers, all of that outside. You feel the light through the window and you suddenly felt her. Some of you are mothers who are carrying your own grief for a pregnancy lost, a child no longer here, or a version of motherhood that never came to be. If that is you, you are not forgotten in this place. You are seen. Some of you, your mother is alive, but far away across the oceans in a country you left, on the other end of a video call that never quite feels like the same in the room. Some of you find Mother's Day complicated, difficult, painful, because the relationship was hard, because things were said that were never resolved, because love and pain live in the same house. And into all of that, the Bible gives us this very short verse in John 11:35. Then Jesus wept. He wept at the grave because, not because he didn't know what he was about to do, but because grief is real. Loss costs something. God is not far away from our pain. He enters it. He is in it with you right even in this moment. And then we come to the final moment, which is the chorus. In chapter 5 of the sermon, then the great that God gives to each and every one of you. The chorus rises again and again because some things must be repeated. And he says, thank you for your love. Even when it wasn't perfect, it was enough. You tried your best. I can see now, and that means everything, everything to me. Moms, I want to give you something today. Sorry, it's not a voucher to Myers. It's not a certificate of approval. A sentence I want you to actually receive today, that your imperfect love was not disqualified by God. It was used by God. There is a word for that. It's called grace. And Paul talked about the significance of what that means in the epistle. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. You see, grace is not what happened when we finally get everything right. Grace is what covers the distance between what we mean to give and what we were able to give on any given day, no matter what looks like. Grace is what a child receives when they grow up and say, it wasn't perfect, but it was enough. Proverbs 31:28 does not say, hey, children rise up and declare her perfect. It says, her children rise and declare her blessed. Blessed is seen and honored and appreciated, recognized as a vessel of something that only came from God. Billy Graham once said, only God himself fully appreciated the influence of a Christian mother in the molding of character in her children. Not the child, not the husband, not the church, but God himself is the only one big enough to measure what she actually did. Again, survey says that 87 of children named their mothers the best example of someone who followed Jesus. But you and I ask the question, what our kids are reading, what are they seeing, what are they reading? Often without knowing, I believe it's this. She was not perfect, but she was real. And she pointed me towards someone greater than herself, and that is Jesus. That is the sermon, and it's not stop being preached to this day. Here's an invitation for us all today. I say us all, because I said the message is for all of us. It's a response that doesn't need words or a mic. I'm going to invite you to do something very simple today. Right up here in front, it's a bowl of water and some petals. In a moment, when the music begins, I want to invite you to do three things. I want you to come. Secondly, grab a petals. And thirdly, place in the water. Now, this is not a performance, and nobody's watching. We are all in the same tender space together. But here's what your petal can mean. You choose the one that fits the story today, because there's a space for every story. Yes, a space for every story. If your mother is with you today, perhaps your petal is an act of rising up and call her. You are blessed, grateful. Gratitude is a way of saying with your body what your words can't quite carry. If your mother is so far away, place your petal as a prayer across the distance, whether it's across over the oceans, across the time zone, across the kilometers between Werribee and wherever she's in. God can carry what we place in His hands across anywhere. If your mother has passed away, place your petal as an act of remembrance, as a way of saying your sermon is still preached. Your love has not been forgotten. Yes, you are gone, but you are just further ahead. If your relationship with your mother is complicated, place your petal as an act of release. But you can't lay something down. The grief, the longing, the things unsaid and the things that can't be unsaid. You don't have to resolve everything today. If you are grieving of any kind of loss today, place your petal as an act of trust and peace. But what does this bowl of water mean? It's a story in a Bible that we all are familiar with. When Jesus met the woman at the well, someone with a complicated story. And Jesus said, who drinks the water I give them will never thirst again. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. See, the Samaritan woman was the sermon, but he, Jesus, was the spring. And the spring does not run dry, not across the oceans, not across years, not across the silence of grief. This morning, I want to give you an opportunity to come. And do this. There's many parts of the story you can connect to. But for me this morning, I'm grieving for loss of life. When you're ready, come. Take a petal. Put it in the water. invitation, come to the water. That is a prayer today. It is well. Let it be. The story. I'm here to receive it, to embrace it, to renew it, to transform it, to heal it, to renew it. Come, bring a story. I'll rewrite it for you, that you can be that recreated new image, new life, new creation, because you made the commitment. Thank you, Lord Jesus. Everything is well because our life is in God's hand and there is nothing can stop it from me.